tax.
The hour 10:15 have arrived. We'll call a tax committee to order when we have a quorum. We have several bills up today. The first bill we have up today is House File 1250, Representative Bliss. If you want to come to the table, please. Okay, Representative Bliss, Representative Erdahl, Representative Knobloch.
Yes.
You have the floor, sir. Life belongs to those that show up. Okay. Representative Knobloch moves House File 387, and members, if you recall, I think we had like 386 Acretia bill, and what the chair had said at that time was that as we discuss House File 387, we'll let the author present the bill. We're not, I don't have anybody on the list to testify. Yes, I do. Oh, yes, I do. One, yes, very important person is here to testify, a very wholesome person, and we're very excited for his testimony today. I was so excited about coming to tax committee this morning to hear it. And so, Chair Knobloch moves House File 387, and Representative Lee Marquardt, as we said, there could be some questions that will have to do with 386 and 387, which will be in order, which will be in order because we had to shut down earlier than I wanted to. Well, it was called noon, and we were done. Okay, so with that, two-year bill, Representative Knobloch moves House File 387. I see no amendments. Please describe your bill, and then we'll have the one test. Is there anyone else that just has to testify on this bill or with concerns thereof other than the witness we all came here to see today? Okay. Chair Knobloch moves 387 to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, members, House File 387 does three things. It updates the existing tax credit, education tax credit, and education tax deduction for inflation. It puts in place an inflator since the tax credit and deduction are not automatically updated each year, and it's been 20 years since they've been updated. And it makes private school tuition, which has been eligible for the state's tax deduction since 1955, also eligible for the education tax credit. The existing education tax deduction was enacted in 1955. Private school tuition has been covered by the tax deduction since 1955, in addition to all the other items that are covered by the education tax credit. Currently, families can deduct up to $1,625 for each child K through 6 and $2,500 for each child grade 7 through 12. I should mention this deduction is available to even the highest income taxpayers. Millionaires in Minnesota are and have been for almost 60 years eligible for a tax deduction for private school tuition. However, the deduction is virtually useless to low-income taxpayers because of the fact that normally it just makes sense for them to take the standard deduction. And this deduction doesn't really get them anything in our progressive tax system. The existing education tax credit was enacted in 1997. It provides a refundable 75% tax credit up to $1,000 for parents of public, private, and homeschool families for a variety of school expenses like school supplies, computer software, tutoring, music instrument rental, after-school enrichment program fees, and other costs. However, the education tax deduction, which starts to phase out now at $33,500, does not include private school tuition. This bill would allow, again, it to include private school tuition and adjust it for inflation so that it goes up to $1,500 as a tax credit instead of $1,000 and moves the income qualifying level up to $50,000. So lower income families that send their kids to public, private, and homeschool will all benefit from the increased education tax credits and deductions in this bill. This bill corrects the discrimination we have in our tax code against lower income families in which we allow a tax deduction for high income families for private school tuition, but don't allow a tax credit for private school tuition for low income families. And so members, I would appreciate your support for the bill, and as the chair indicated, we have Mr. Bartholomew to testify.
Okay. Is there anyone else, again, just to, I know some new people came here, anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? And again, members, as you know, we took a lot of testimony on 386, the creature bill, which I think the same arguments would be made from the same people. I would think they would be. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and it is truly a pleasure to be here.
And we're delighted that you're here.
Thank you.
Please present your testimony.
He's always here.
I said that the other day. You got away from me. Okay. To your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 387, and in particular the education tax credit provisions in Sections 2 and 3. We believe updating both the income eligibility and the tax credit amounts is appropriate, especially as Representative Knobloch mentioned, it's been nearly 20 years since those amounts were last set. These amounts will help low-income families support their children's education by improving their ability to provide tutoring services, instructional material, or music lessons. We also encourage you to expand the eligible uses of the credit by including tuition. By including tuition, again, as Representative Knobloch has mentioned, we can help to equalize the ability of all families to choose the school they believe will best meet their children's needs. Choosing which school you're going to send your son or daughter is an important decision, and finding the best fit for them will play a key role in determining their success. As you consider this bill, we'd ask that you think about it through the eyes of a family. Specifically, a family that can use financial assistance to either supplement their child's education or select the school they believe will be the best fit for their child. House File 387 will not only help individual students, but our educational system as a whole, and thank you very much.
And thank you for your testimony, sir. We do have, I believe the department has some things to say, but we'll go to member questions first. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Knobloch, for bringing this forward. I think it's vitally important that we, create a level playing field for all students and empower parents to make choices from that for what they believe is best for their children. I would like to, I served on the school board for a number of years.
How many?
How many?
17.
And the first thing I want to just... Yeah. I'll take a test on you later. Okay? But,
And
what I observed, though, is that the public school system, I believe in a strong public school system. I also see some of the most dedicated and hardworking people I've ever met in the public school system, okay? But I do believe there are times when students, because of their parents' income, that need to make a choice and a different setting because of various reasons in their lives. Yet they seem trapped in the public school system, and it's miserable for them, it's miserable for their parents, and in fact, it's miserable for teachers and the school administration. And this bill would help parents in situations where they believe their child needs a different opportunity to be educated in, to make that choice and to help them tax-wise. So, I, for whatever reason, when I was on the school board, I got into a number of areas of special ed and controversial discipline. Situations. Not that I'm drawn to controversial situations, but it seems like I get involved with them sometimes. And sometimes I came away believing it was more the parents' fault than the school's, and sometimes I came away believing that the school had more fault in the situation than the parents and the child. But who's going to sort that all out? And you sit and pay lawyers in some cases, $250 an hour to sit and talk to each other. Nothing against lawyers. It's a waste of money. Let the parent, empower the parent as much as possible to make the choice. Many of those parents want to change the atmosphere. Maybe the parent would figure out it was more their fault than somebody else's fault. But currently, we're seeing them trapped, and that, I think, is an unfortunate situation. The next thing I just want to address is this idea that, separation of church and state are involving tax dollars with parochial schools. You know, when I served in the Marine Corps, and during the Vietnam War, I didn't have to go to Vietnam, but I was in during that time, I got the VA bill, or the GI Bill. When I got out, I got that GI Bill to go to college. I could go to a Lutheran college, a Methodist college, a Catholic college, or a secular college. Those were federal tax dollars that I could spend at whatever college I chose to go to. Now, I chose to go to a secular college, okay? But that was a choice I had. And there's nothing illegal about this. In terms of church and state, and I think the U.S. Supreme Court and state Supreme Courts have weighed in on this. The last thing, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to bring up, and this is going to be a little difficult, okay?
Does it have to do with this bill?
Yes, it does. And this is about you, Mr. Chair. No, I'm just kidding.
Mr. Chair, just in full disclosure, I didn't ask him to make any of these statements.
And I will
call him all that's coming.
And I will
confirm. You have the floor, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll confirm his comment. He did not ask me to make this. You know, part of the time I was on the school board, about 6 years, I was chief negotiator, okay, for certified staff and a number of other areas. And we heard a lot about you're taking funding away from the public school by passing this bill or Representative Cresha's bill. And I do have to share this. And again, I have tremendous respect for people, for many of the people I met in the public educational system. But one of the problems with funding that I observed time and again is that if we got $100,000 in additional funding, the contract settlements would be, that we settled, benefits and salaries, would be $125,000. If we got $150,000 of additional funding, the settlements would be $175,000 to $200,000. If we got $200,000 of the funding, the settlements would be $225,000 or $250,000. So no matter how much money we got, we always settle contracts and salaries and benefits over and above that amount, guaranteeing that in 2 years, the system will be broke, and we go back down to the legislature and say, we're broke, we need more money. So until you fix that problem, okay, there's always going to be a shortage. It's not just public education. This happens at the state, the federal, county, and almost every level, where no matter what amount of funding is available, we always settle for additional, guaranteeing that we're broke, and 2 years later, we go back to the state and federal government and say, we're broke, we need no more money. That has to be fixed, and that would go a long ways to creating adequate funding in our government programs and schools, and quit blaming bills like this for taking the funding away. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of February 22nd. Any additions or corrections? Excuse me. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we're going to go to a few questions. Then Mr. Cummings, if you could please join us, and we'll have the presentation from the department. Representative Schultz and then Marquardt. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm just really tired of hearing about choices because low-income families don't really have a choice to go to an expensive private institution. And if we fully funded our public schools, they wouldn't need a choice. They would find all of the services they needed in their community public school. So that was just a comment, no question.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, my question is around accountability. And since 2014, in our public schools, we've actually had an accountability system, the world's best workforce, which means schools have to strive for five main goals: achievement, closing achievement gap, and graduation rates, and all those type of things. And the school district, by law, has to come up with a strategic plan to how they're going to strive to meet these goals. And if they don't, over a three-year period, the Department of Education can step in and divert funds to make sure they're doing that. So there's actually an accountability system, which I don't believe there really was before that time. And I'm not saying schools weren't trying to get to that point, but there really wasn't a system in place. But there is now, where schools are held accountable. And my question is, when it's in the tax code like it is here, you don't have that accountability. It's stepping around this accountability system of the world's best workforce. Which concerns me. And there's a lot of dollars going into education and so forth. So that's my concern. And I mean, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, we have a system of accountability. Why don't we keep it within that system that protects our students, our parents, and taxpayers for results? It kind of protects them for the dollars we spend to get results, and if we don't get results, there's some accountability.
And before we go to that, Chairman Knobloch moves House File 387, so it is officially before us since we have a quorum. Chairman Knobloch, to the Marquardt question.
Sure, Mr. Chair, lead Marquardt. Well, I would say two things. First of all, we've had obviously private schools in the state for a long time. They've had a good history of achievement and results and performance. But I would say that private schools and the bill that I would have here offer the ultimate accountability. And the ultimate accountability is that the parents still have to pay some money for their child's education. And if they are unhappy with the performance of their school, they can then move their children elsewhere. They can, if they are in a private school and they're unhappy with it, they can put their child back in the public school system. They can move them to a different private school system. They could conceivably homeschool them. So we have the ultimate accountability of the parents who want to see their children achieve and are already, if they are in the private schools, forking over some of their own money to have a educational option for their children that they think is better. If they don't like it, they have the accountability and the incentive to move their children elsewhere.
Thank you, and I totally agree with the parental choice. But why not give the parental choice within this accountability system? We could expand the early learning with the $50 million over 2 years that your bill, Representative Knobloch, spends. You could fund another 4,000 students in early learning scholarships, which is choice and an accountability system. You could double school readiness. You could increase the voluntary pre-K. You could double the number of students in that. Those are all parental choice type of programs. And so I just think you lose track of the accountability here. And, just today in the New York Times, there was a story on scholarship programs. And I've got two of them here, the Louisiana Scholarship Program and the Ohio Ed Choice Scholarship Program. And in both of these, and I've got them here if you'd like to see, those students who went from public to private schools with a scholarship program performed poorly in comparison to their public school counterparts, especially in math. And in one, they evaluated the Louisiana scholarship program for 2 years, and it went down quite a bit the first year, and then did come back up the second year, but still below the first year. And in Ohio, they simply underperformed their public counterparts. And so, and I'm not Representative Davis. I attended a private school, K through ninth grade, 10 years. St. Joe's Warriors we were back in the, now they're the Saints, the Catholic school, but they were the Warriors at one time.
After you were there, they became the Saints.
Yeah, after I left, they became
after
the
Saints.
After I left, they became the
Saints. For the record.
So I don't want to get into that, but what I'm saying is that if we're using $50 million, why would we not put those into a system where we have accountability and we can look at results and all those things versus not doing it? That's my be concerned. $50 million is quite a bit, and we could do a lot in early childhood education within the context and within the system that we have our accountability. So, Mr. Chair, those are my big concerns. And I appreciate you bringing this forward, but I don't think it's necessarily going to get the results we want, and we won't even know if we get the results because we're putting into a non-accountable system, in my mind.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I'll
leave Mark.
I'll go to the department.
Sure. A couple things I would say. First of all, I could give you all kinds of studies that show that overall, when people have done tax credits like this or scholarship tax credits like the Cresha bill, that performance has improved in those schools. Louisiana, I don't want to spend a lot of time getting into that particular example, but they had a very, very prescriptive system that was such that many, many private schools in the state did not want to join that particular program, and the general feeling was that only schools that really, really needed students and maybe then weren't the best of the private schools got into it, and because of that you didn't have as good of results with that particular system as many other school, private school type tax credit programs would have. I would also say that, remember, this isn't just about private schools. If you look at the revenue estimate, about 40% of the money is not involving private school tuition. There's a lot of money in here that are going to public school students, parents that are sending their kid to after-school tutoring or other enrichment activities. So this, again, even though people are focusing it on private school tuition, there's a lot of money in this that are going to public school students as well. I would also, again, say that, as I said before, there is accountability. The parents enforce accountability. Many, many of these schools, which generally have been in existence for years, these private schools, if you want to focus on that, they have their students take a norm test. Many of them have to take the state test, or they take other nationally normed tests where you can see how they're performing, and historically they perform very well and oftentimes outperform the public schools. So I don't think there's a concern about that. We've had private schools in this state for a long time, and they've performed very well.
Lead Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the department, please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome, committee. Are you a resource today?
I am a resource today, Mr. Chair. I was able to briefly talk to Representative Knobloch before the hearing last week and today. This bill increases the maximum K-12 education deduction, extends the K-12 credit to non-public school tuition, increases the maximum credit, increases the income at which the credit begins to phase out, and makes other adjustments. This bill provides additional ways the state government would reimburse individuals for private school tuition. One of the primary concerns with this proposal is that it has very little accountability to whether or not is it effective at actually creating positive outcomes. With public K-12 schools, we know that the schools are following state and federal accountability requirements. Private schools do not take state tests or are subject to other standards of accountabilities. This bill would increase the public financing of private schools. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith in their budget prioritize Minnesota students by believing in and investing in our public K-12 schools. This administration is committed to improving educational opportunities for every Minnesotan everywhere in Minnesota by expanding the voluntary pre-K, doubling the enrollees, by investing over $600 million more to provide better schools for students and families everywhere in Minnesota, and as part of that, to increase our investment in special education by $40 million, as well as other investments to improve education. This bill shouldn't be used as a tool to not provide the needed investments and improvements to our public schools across Minnesota. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith are opposed to this bill and remain concerned about many of the aspects outlined in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to be a resource today. We look forward to continuing the conversation with you, Mr. Chair, Chair Knobloch, members and staff throughout session on this bill and other important bills.
Thank you. Questions? Chair Loon, to the department. Or the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and probably more of a comment than a question, but and I was just listening to Representative Marquardt, and we've had these discussions on these types of bills before in this committee and the Education Committee and others. But You know, I'm just struck by a couple of things. One, when the discussion of choice comes up, and Representative Markworth's suggestion about taking the $50 million and putting it into pre-K scholarships or something. And I guess I just don't understand at the nugget of these discussions why choice is okay then, but not okay somehow for kids K-12. We have it at the higher education system. We have it in the pre-K, but it's not okay for K-12. And I guess I just failed to understand why that's not okay. And with regards to sort of the cost or money being diverted, I mean, those parents who may want their children in private schools still do support the public schools. They're in a district that maybe has a referendum or a building. I mean, their tax dollars are going to support their public schools without question. And so it's not like these parents are somehow, you know, diverting all public dollars to a school of their choice that may be private through this. Their tax dollars are supporting our public education system. So, you know, I think if we're going to be for choice in part of our system, I think we ought to embrace it for the entire system. And we've had some really compelling testimony here from parents who have found solutions and success for their children in private schools, and why we would decide that we're going to deny them that, but other parents, maybe with a preschooler, can have that choice. I just don't think that that's a logical argument. So, you know, for those reasons and others, I think Representative Knobloch is bringing a rational, thoughtful proposal. And, you know, for my friends in public education, I mean, I educated both of my children in public schools. I'm a big believer in public schools. And as Representative Creasy would often say, it doesn't have to be either or. Let's support both of them. Let's support choices for parents and be strong supporters of our public schools. We can do both of these things. So with that, I would just ask that members maybe step back and take another look at this, because, again, if you're a supporter of pre-K scholarships, which can go to private institutions, any institution of quality, and that's okay, why not for a kindergartner or for a sixth grader or for a tenth grader? You know, and finally, on the issue of accountability, you know, the parents are the ultimate arbiters, really, of what's accountable. And we do have a system in place now where the schools are asked to create goals and to live up to those goals in the world's best workforce. But we really haven't seen any, we're just coming up on that 3 years, any action taken to redirect funds from public schools. So while the system has been set up, it really hasn't been fully implemented and come to bear. So I do hope that we see that. But, you know, to basically be setting schools, public schools aside as somehow accountable in other ways that other schools are not, we really haven't fully seen that come to fruition yet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions of the department or the author, Chair Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really a comment from the policy chair. Private schools in my area are using the state standards in math and reading and giving their children the MCAs, because if it is an elementary school such as the one Chair Marquardt attended, they do matriculate to the public school, since there are no private schools, high schools, few of them in rural Minnesota. So they do that because they want their children, their students, to be ready for the standards that they'll face when they enter ninth grade, for example. My other comment is that we don't distinguish in transportation or in non-people aid or in nutrition when it comes to public and private. We don't distinguish. If you're a student, for example, at Christo Rey, you get subsidized in the nutrition program from tax dollars. The same is true with non-people aid in textbooks and in transportation. We don't distinguish. We transport my area. I have buses going to Community Christian in Pease and to Princeton and to Malacca, and the same with Faith Faith Community Christian in Forreston, and they're all riding together, and they get off at different stops, and they have the greatest respect for each other, and then when they get to high school, they all join together, and they compete on teams. They even compete against each other at the elementary level. So we don't make those distinguishing differences, so I find it problematic that we continue this conversation about one or the other. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions for the department or the author? Representative Knobloch, do you want to wrap it up?
Sure. Just two final points, Mr. Chair and members. Number one, back to Representative Marquardt talking about other things we could do with this money. Well, you talk about early childhood and $50 million. I was the author of a bill last year, House Bill 2749, that had $50 million more in it for early childhood, and many people, including my school district, benefited from it, and I expect we'll have other money for early childhood on our regular K-12 bill this year. I don't think that it has to be an either-or choice. Certainly, we have other programs that are going to be funded, and they do good work too, but I don't think that that means that we shouldn't fund this particular program. Secondly, members, I would remind people that this virtually identical bill did pass the House in 2015 and passed the House Tax Committee, and secondly, that the governor's budget in 2015 and 16 actually had elements of this bill, adjusting it for inflation so that it went up to not $50,000 like my bill did, but $45,000. So the governor in his last budget actually recommended portions of this bill as well. And I would appreciate your support.
Mr. Cummings, a clarification, if you want to.
Well, first, I have so much respect for the members of this committee. It is almost like a subcommittee of K-12 committee. We've got two chairs, and then we've got past chairs, Representative Garofalo and Marquardt, so I'm learning a lot. I just wanted to state that, you know, the governor has supported in the past and proposed changes to the K-12 credit, but that was for the K-12 credit, that was limited to the people who can currently take the credit. So unlike Representative Knobloch's bill, there was not an expansion to private school tuition. But we look forward to continuing to work with Representative Knobloch.
Yeah, and that's correct. And I didn't say that there was an expansion to private school tuition. I certainly didn't mean to imply that.
And so the questions have been open for 386 and 387. Well, we have 387 before us. With that, thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Cummings from the department. We will lay over House File 387 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, members, for the discussion there. Okay, I'm going to go to House File 574. If we can get it done quickly, because the next bill, Representative Bliss, will probably take a little bit longer. Okay, and then we may go to, if we can do them quick, with full and complete open debate quickly, I think we'll go to the Anderson bill, and then we'll have some time. I don't want to rush anybody here, but the Bliss bill, we'll have a little more discussion, I'm sure. So thank you, Chair Knobloch, for that bill. And for the, I will move House File 574, and the motion will be to lay over for possible inclusion on this tax bill. Now, is there anyone wishing to testify on behalf of this bill? In the audience, anyone with concerns? Department?
No, thank you.
Okay, so you know what that means, Chair at all?
Quick and easy.
I've got a mute button is what that means. Okay. Okay, so we have before us, I have moved the Erdahl Bill 574.
That's a good amendment.
Also move, is the A3 amendment yours, sir?
Yes.
Okay, I will move the H0574E3 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you for the vote. Okay. The bill as amended, please describe your bill. And now, was some form of this in 848?
Mr. Chairman, yes, pretty much it was.
Okay. So to your bill, sir.
Thank you. Fine piece of legislation. It was in the tax bill before. Nearly as good as the Lanesboro Dam bill. But we'll proceed here. Just real quickly, 50% of Minnesota teachers earn master's degrees. 92% of them get their master's in content areas, not in content areas, but like in education
but not in what they are teaching. A study by the Center for American Progress found that teachers were more effective after earning a master's in content areas, particularly in math and science. The general principle is if you know more about what you teach, you should be a better teacher, although it's not an absolute. And so that's what this does. It is also, I think, even more needy at this time because of the decisions made by the Higher Learning Commission regarding concurrent education, where we have teachers in the college in the classroom who are teaching through colleges and not in their content area. And that is an objection that has been raised by the Higher Learning Commission. The core academic areas are the ones that are defined in federal and state law. And again, what we're trying to do here is to incentivize teachers to get master's degrees in their content area by offering a tax credit of $2,500.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. A discussion from members to 574 as amended. Chair Carlson.
I have a question, Representative Erdahl, dealing with two aspects of the bill. One, you don't qualify, apparently, if you've already started a master's program and being like yourself, a retired teacher. A lot of teachers would begin working on their master's degree, myself included, on a part-time basis and would be earning that degree over sometimes a period of years. And it would appear that you're screening out then people that may, and I guess my concern would be people that would be at the threshold just starting on their master's degree, and with that language in there, they're screened out. Before you comment on that, then the other question, and maybe you can take them both, that I have is that, and I'm generally supportive of what you're trying to do. I just point out where I think could be a couple of flaws. The other question deals with when you're talking about a related degree. Probably like you or most teachers, I had a major and a minor. So if I chose to get my master's and my minor degree, my minor major, not major, but my minor, would that disqualify me? Because often I was not teaching in my minor. From time to time I would, depending on department loads and so on. Once in a while I would pick up, in my case I had a business minor, so I'd pick up an accounting course or two, but it was never my major field.
Chairman,
so those would be two questions.
Okay, Chairman Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And if you were teaching, if your minor was a core teaching area, then you could, it would qualify. If this is something you are teaching that is in the core area. And your other question. Give me that one again.
Chair Carlson.
Yeah, well, Chairman, you said if you were teaching in that area, and in my example, maybe I wasn't clear. I didn't each and every year teach a course in accounting, or sometimes it was business law. It depended on the load of the various departments, and I think when you answered the question, maybe it wasn't your intent. You said if you were teaching in that core area, and yet you're licensed and certified to teach in your minor field, but you may not each and every school year or each and every semester, for that matter, be teaching in your minor field.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the intent is not that you have to be teaching in that each year, but this is something that is in your realm of teaching. It could be, come up with an example, you're a social studies teacher, and you get your master's in economics, because through the compendium of your teaching, it could be likely assumed that you would be teaching economics at some point. Maybe not every year, but you could be.
Chair Carl.
Would you remind me of your other question, please?
Representative Erdahl.
Yeah, my other question, I think is clarification. Maybe it would be clearer if we talked at some point, if the bill moves forward, about your licensure, your field under licensure. That would perhaps clarify it if you're licensed in social studies and, in my case, business education. Maybe that would be a better way to talk about it than if you were, you'd qualify for the credit if you were getting a master's in the fields you were licensed in, perhaps, just as a suggestion. The other question I had is
First Representative of
if I could just respond. Oh. If you've got some written suggestions that you'd like to show me on that, I'd be glad to look at it.
No, sound like we're sharing, well, too. That's not, Mr. Chairman, my argument. I just want to make sure it's clear. The other question that I asked was the nature of a lot of teachers working on a master's degree is that they're teaching full-time, and they may be working on their master's degree over a period of years, and you have language that you have to have started on a date certain, and there may be teachers out there that normally would qualify, but they've unfortunately taken a course or two and have already started on the master's degree and yet have a long way to go. And they would be screened out under the language, as I understand it.
Yeah. Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Carlson, you are correct. And basically, I had, for a fiscal note and for what I'm trying to achieve, I had to start somewhere. And I decided that for the purposes of this bill, it would be best to just start going forward from now. I could have done it other ways. There are other things I could have done, things besides a tax credit, but everything that I tried to do or I thought of, the way I'm doing it seemed to work the best.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I'll just stop. Other than in this committee, we often talk about level playing field, and there would be a difference between somebody that might be at the threshold and just started a master's degree and someone else that just begins to start their master's degree and who would qualify for the credit. And so that wouldn't exactly be a level playing field, but I'll just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion? Okay, I will move that House File 574 as amended to be later for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Members, in that packet there was also a letter you'll want to look at from Mark Anderson Kelleher from the MHTA. Okay, item next, let's go to, thank you, Chair Erdahl. Whoa. Margaret Anderson, how did I do that? I'm amazing. I really am. Okay, I apologize, members, that goes to the 1250. Okay, let's go 1250. We have some folks that have driven from some distance. And some had an extremely beautiful trip up from the southeast. And we're very happy to have you here. So we'll start. I have on the list Mr. Todd Raisler, Gary Johnson, Dick Soberg, John Duklich, and Dukic. Is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of this bill from the audience here? Anyone wish to testify with concerns? Department? Okay. So let's start in whatever order you'd like. Representative Bliss, I will move House File 1250. I see that there are no amendments. So I will move House File 1250 to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Over the past few years, the state of Minnesota's made broadband deployment a priority, and the legislature's taken several actions to spur investments in deployment of broadband. And, you know, we've really established some high-speed goals, and one of them is ubiquitous coverage from border to border, which is going to require some heavy investments in fiber to accomplish that goal. And, you know, let's see, over the past 3 years, $65 million in broadband projects has been distributed through Minnesota. Yet today our broadband goals and our tax policy communication, our telecommunications providers have a bit of a disconnect. I was surprised to learn that the telecommunications providers are treated differently than virtually all other businesses that have sales tax exemptions broadly applicable for purchase of capital equipment necessary to carry out their business. And for telecom providers, this isn't the case. A small but critically important list of items have been exempted, and that includes fiber, poles, conduit, wire, and cable that are not exempt from taxes. I'm just going to stop there and just say that in those $65 million worth of broadband grants that we have passed out to our telecommunications providers, they have to pay a large portion of that back in sales taxes on the equipment that they use to put the fiber and telecommunications equipment in the ground. And I've asked some local providers to come up and tell you exactly how this is impacting their business and how we can better utilize the grant money to get broadband out to the communities.
Thank you. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative, is it Bliss? Is that your name?
Yes.
Is this your first time before the committee?
Representative Bliss?
Yeah, and I know where you're going with this, and I think we need to have a rules committee meeting on this because I am getting conflicting reports.
Chair Garofalo, there is no conflict,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bliss.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bliss, is this your first time before this committee?
Before this committee, yes, Representative
Garofalo. Okay. Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bliss, what are the treats?
Representative Bliss?
I'm sorry, Representative Garofalo, they did not make it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, clearly House File 1250 is not ready for prime time in the tax committee.
It may have to be laid over.
Point of order.
Second that.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Just having a little fun.
Thank you.
Okay, Bill. Apparently, Bliss did not get the memo. Okay.
Oh, you will now.
Do we have a bill before us? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do. Okay.
And to that point, Mr. Chairman, we did have a mini rules committee last night where I was informed that it's only your first committee that we testify in front of.
That's wrong information.
Duly noted, sir.
Mr. Michael, that would not be correct, would it?
We need to
undertake,
Mr. Michael.
Chair Carlson.
I'm trying to remember, didn't we have one of the members that made that mistake the other day come in with treats the next day?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true, because we had not just laid over the bill. It was destroyed. Of course, we're on here when something dies. It's never really dead.
But Mr. Chairman, he could correct it by coming in next Tuesday.
I think that would be helpful, Chair Carlson.
Yeah. I'll take that under advisement.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Okay, now, to the bill. Thank you, Chair Garofalo. Who would like to go first?
Oh, really?
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Chair Davids and members of the committee. My name is Gary Johnson. I am the CEO of Paul Bunyan Communications. We're headquartered in Bemidji. We are a member-owned cooperative, and we have been at this for about 65 years. You know, originally our history is about getting phone service where others wouldn't bring it to rural farms and homes. Ironically, that mission hasn't changed. Today is all about broadband, though. Actually, for the last 20 years, we've been one of the more aggressive companies in the state trying to deliver broadband to those that don't have it. And it is with that in mind that we are here before you today in support of your consideration of extending the sales tax exemption to fiber, for us in particular fiber and conduit, but certainly all five of these items that are listed. Maybe to personalize it a little bit more and put a face on these numbers, Paul Bunyan, our cooperative, just last year bought about 3 million feet of fiber optic cable. That's 568 miles. So just us, just last year, 568 miles of fiber optic cable. Additionally, another 450,000 feet or 85 miles of conduit. So for us, this sales tax impact was about $160,000 just last year that we paid. And we have been the beneficiary and very thankful for the border-to-border grant program. And we have participated in that last year, now this coming year. If you try to apply the folks, look at the folks that we're delivering broadband to, they really have, in large part, no broadband access. And so we're delivering a fiber product to them, gigabit in most of our cases. And the $160,000 really represents, right out of the broadband grant program that we received funds, about 50 to 100 homes and rural businesses that we did not build to last year. We could not build to last year because instead of making that investment for those folks, we sent that back in the form of sales tax to the state. So we certainly support your consideration of this proposal. We have in our DNA getting more broadband out to rural, especially as a cooperative, out to these rural areas. Every little bit that we can do can help that. If you look at the broadband grant program, some of the applications may be proposed to serve what we were unable to serve just in the form of sales tax that we paid last year. So appreciate your consideration and your time considering this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Johnson? Chair Erickson?
Mr. Chair, just a comment from my experience in the Paul Bunyan provider area. They really do a good job.
Thank you, Chair Erickson.
Now, it's... What town are you out of?
Headquarters is Bemidji, and we also serve Grand Rapids. We actually serve about 5,000 square miles of north central Minnesota.
Did you play Roseville in hockey this year?
Not me personally.
But did the Lumberjacks?
The Lumberjacks always play Roseville at some point. We have both boys and girls, I believe. Who, I don't know. I
who won?
I can't speak to that, I'm afraid.
You have to become
I'm a baseball guy. I'm the one guy in Bemidji that can't speak to hockey, so.
Ooh.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's unfortunate. Okay. With that, we will go to the next witness unless there's questions from members. Mr. Johnson, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Who'd like to go next?
I'll do that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Dukic with the Minnesota High Tech Association.
And members, you have in your packet a letter from the Minnesota High Tech Association. Mr. Dukic.
Well, that's pretty much the extent of my testimony. No, I just wanted to, again, point out the letter and note that this is an item that MHTA supports and has been supported by the Governor's Broadband and Task Force in past years. And we feel that expanding the sales tax exemption to include telecom equipment will help encourage broadband providers to make investments in advanced telecommunications technologies and free up capital to expand network deployment, reaching more businesses, households, and institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you could please give your president and CEO my very best. Okay, questions for Mr. Dukic. Okay, thank you very much. Who would like to go next? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Schobert, and I'm the owner of Schobert's Incorporated, a cable television and internet company based in Thief River Falls, Minnesota.
Home of the Prowlers?
Yes.
Prowlers?
Oh, okay. Very good.
Okay, to your testimony, sir.
They did play Roseau and they didn't win in the girls' hockey, by the way.
How about the boys?
I don't think that's been played yet.
Okay, I'll be watching for it. Mr. Silbert.
Thank you. I also serve on the Minnesota Cable Communications Association Board of Directors, and I'm here today on their behalf in support of House File 1250, a bill that expands sales tax exemption to further investments in the deployment of broadband. Schobert's Incorporated serves 37 towns and townships in northwestern Minnesota and employs 21 people in our communities. Over the past 5 years, we've invested $5 million in capital expenditures. The cable industry in Minnesota, over the past 5 years, has invested over $700 million in capital expenditures. Expanding the exemption to include the core materials used to deliver broadband, fiber, conduit, poles, wire, and cable, would allow us to further maximize our investment in the broadband and innovation. The sales tax exemption is a great way to do this because it's technology neutral. It's an efficient way for the state to encourage access to high-speed internet for all Minnesotans. Over the past 5 years, Schobert's Incorporated has spent more than $250,000 in sales tax. This money could have been used to further invest in our local community. My company received a broadband grant this year from the state of Minnesota. A large portion of the cost of providing broadband in the rural areas is fiber, wire, and conduit. We will pay almost 7% in sales tax on this material back to the state. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me to do that. It's not very efficient. I also serve on the Governor's Broadband Task Force. In 2016, one of the recommendations of the task force was for policymakers to consider the expansion of the sales tax exemption. This includes the materials that we are talking about today, and it would insist in network development. It's a good idea. Capital expenditure made by the cable companies improves infrastructure that benefits the entire state of Minnesota, not just the companies making the investment. Maintaining a high level of telecommunications investment is key to individuals, educational institutions, healthcare providers and researchers, technology advancement, and organizations and businesses of all sizes. I respectfully ask for your support in this bill, and thank you for your time. I'm willing to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Schoberg. Any questions for the witness? Okay, and we'll go now to the next witness. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Todd Raisler. I represent Ascentec, which is a company located in the far reaches of the southeastern state of Minnesota. I can't get any further without going to Wisconsin or Iowa. We're in your area, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
And you're very familiar with our topography and that. We actually cover three different states, but we are our home office is in Houston. We employ about 90 people on a full-time basis. In our area, with our topography, we have high bluffs and long, winding valleys. Very difficult to deploy broadband in terms of wireless and that. So our end game is fiber. And in the last 3 years, we spent we paid sales tax of about $190,000, with a projection of this year about another $70,000. And for us, that would be about another 15 miles worth of fiber in our rural communities that we could then provide broadband, effective broadband to our communities. So.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Raisler? Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To any of the testifiers, so if this bill were to become law, to what extent could you pass these savings on to the customers?
Mr. Raisler?
I'd be happy to try to answer that, because we're a cooperative, as is Mr. Johnson over here and Paul Bunyan. Our end game is not short-term maximization of profits. That it's long-term viability of our company and the areas that we serve. So we need the cash, and obviously there's a huge CapEx to providing broadband and providing especially fiber to our rural areas. So if that helps answer your question, I'd be happy to show you our financials that show that that this CapEx does take a lot of cash. I mean, in terms of deploying broadband. So I don't know if that helps answer your question.
Chair Erickson.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? You want to wrap it up then? Representative Bliss, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you've heard from the testifiers, that the fiber optics that they're laying in the ground is really necessary in rural Minnesota. And even with the wireless deployment, they need fiber optics to drive the towers. So this bill will go a long way in extending the broadband to the citizens of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. I do apologize. Did the department have comments on this bill? And I apologize. Mr. Cummings, do you want to suspend this bill? This one, 1250?
No, thank you, Mr.
thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay, so with that, I will move that House File 1250 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend your motion to add pending future treats. It will be laid over for. Okay, I'd like to amend your motion.
That's a friendly amendment to lead Marquardt. House File 1250 will be laid over for possible inclusion if certain requirements are met.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Carlson?
Just in addition to that, if the chair hasn't properly informed people with their first bill up before the committee, maybe we should have a motion that I think would probably pass with maybe one dissenting vote that the chair is responsible to provide the treats.
I thought traditional folklore. It went point well taken, Chair Carlson. With that, thank you very much.
We'll
go to item last, but first in our hearts, of course, House File 602 is being moved by Chair Anderson S. And members, let's see, is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of Chair Anderson S.'s bill? Anyone with concerns? The department?
Not this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay, so Chair Anderson S. moves House File 602, two-year bill. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Out of respect for your time, I'll be very brief. You are all familiar with the K-12 tax credit, not the deduction, but the tax credit. What my bill does is it applies the tax credit to pre-kindergarten expenses. Many of the facilities that we have in Minnesota do excellent work in preparing our kids for kindergarten, and this is helping parents use this tool to further their child's education. And that's my bill in a nutshell, Mr. Chair.
Questions for members? Okay, we've seen this before. Yeah, okay. Questions? Okay, with that, Chair Anderson asks for a newsroom motion that House File 602 be delivered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I want to thank members for their work today, thank the department and witnesses that came in to testify on bills. With that, is there anything else for the good of the order? With that, good government all the time, members, we are adjourned.